Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for joining me, friends, on the NOLA Drink Show. Happy to have you here as always. That's right, kicking off your weekend and getting your happy hour going in the right direction. And as always, to my radio listeners out there, the views of this host and this show certainly do not reflect the views of much of what you will find on this station. Got a really good show coming up for you here this time around. Always a pleasure to have Bart Watson on. Bart is the chief economist for the Brewers Association, which is the primary trade organization benefiting, advocating for, creating policy, studying, all that good stuff for the craft brew industry here in the United States. Bart's a great guest, and he always brings a lot to the table. They just put out their 2021 production report, which basically summarizes the craft beer industry in the U.S. as well as really the larger beer industry in the U.S. And it's always really fascinating to go through that with Bart, talk about some of the numbers, of course, contrasting 2021 with 2020, what that looks like, as we all probably can recall quite easily. 2020, bad year, right? So 2021, definitely showed a market improvement in things, but there's a lot of nuance there, and we talk through a lot of that with Bart. Bart does stick around for our podcast-only segment, Another Shot with NOLA Drink, so if you are listening on the radio, just go to noladrinks.com. You will find the podcast waiting there for you, where we continue the interesting conversation. They put out what we talk about in that segment. They put out two interesting lists, the top 50 overall brewers or beer producers in the country, and then the top 50 craft beer producers as they define craft beer. And we talk about that during the regular part of the interview. And so we kind of unpack a little bit about what you find on those two lists. And we also get some information and some thoughts and ideas and such from Bart on what he thinks is going on in 2022, some stuff we've seen already and just kind of where he thinks the year may be going. So if you're into beer, definitely don't want to miss that. Go check out noladrinks.com and get our podcast only segment, Another Shot with NOLA Drinks. Looking forward next week, friends, to French Quarter Fest. That's right, it's back. Also, you can go to our website, just go back a couple shows, and you'll get our annual French Quarter Festival preview. One of my favorite things to bring to you. Hadn't been able to bring it to you for a couple years because, well, there hadn't been a French Quarter Fest for a couple years. So excited that the event is coming back. It's such an important event culturally, economically, entertainment-wise. The whole thing is just so dang important here in New Orleans. It starts next week, Thursday, April 21st, and runs through Sunday, April 24th. Wall-to-wall music all throughout the French Quarter. Big stages, little stages, medium-sized stages, great food, great drink, whole lot of cool stuff going on. One thing I want to flag to your attention is that they started a new thing called French Quarter Festival After Dark. Keep the music going, they say. Four special parties in the evening after all the stages in the French Quarter close at different venues around town where you can go catch great acts. And one of them that I would definitely want to flag to your attention is the last one, Sunday, April 24th at Midnight Revival, which is the new bar at the Frenchman Hotel, which is the new hotel that opened up on Frenchman Street right next to our friends at Louisiana Music Factory. The hotel is located at 417 Frenchman Street. And their event features the terrific musician Holly Rock. The doors open at 7, and the music is from 8 till 11. And yeah, it's free. And it's a really great bar. And as a matter of fact, our next week's show, we're going to be at Midnight Revival talking to them. And Patrick Williams, who runs their bar, and a couple other folks are probably going to join us. But we're going to talk to Patrick about what they got going on at Midnight Revival. A lot of great tropical drink program action going on there. And it's a great music venue that they've opened up and some really cool stuff. So look forward to bringing you that show next week, which will be right in the throes of French Quarter Fest. So, you know, check out French Quarter Fest. And also, if you're in town, of course, check out French Quarter Fest After Dark, in particular, that one Sunday, April 24th at Midnight Revival. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and then we're going to be back chatting with Bart Watson from the Brewers Association. Come on back.
Located at the Frenchman Hotel, Midnight Revival pairs live music with an exciting beverage program. Our new spot on Frenchman Street offers classic cocktails, but it's the tropical libations that will keep you coming back. Midnight Revival even has our own take on the hurricane called the Champion of the World, made with passion fruit liqueur and a blood orange puree. Visit Midnight Revival at 417 Frenchman Street, follow Midnight Revival NOLA on social media, or visit midnightrevival.com for the latest updates on sips and sounds that await.
Now, if you ever been down
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have you here, as always. Happy to have my friend Bart Watson back, Chief Economist of the Brewers Association. Bart, we make this about a two-time-a-year thing, but it's really good to see you. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back. It's great to be back on the show.
Absolutely, man. You look like a relaxed man because you've got a t-shirt on. It's Friday. We were talking about the NBA. You got your Warriors shirt on. Respect there. And you just completed the main reason why you're on today is you just completed a major task. You guys put out at least the bulk of your 2021 annual craft beer report. How'd it go?
A little more relaxed now that those numbers are out, but you know, I mean, I would say 2021 was kind of an in-between year, you know, kind of like, you know, 2020 was, where, you know, we bounced back from the depths of COVID. You know, I think that's true for many breweries that, you know, 21 was a much better year than 20 for sure, but we're not really back where we were. And that's kind of what we saw in our numbers, you know, 8% growth after 10% decline the year before. So really good growth, but on a, you know, kind of easy comp, as the people in the industry would say.
Bart, real quick, sorry to interrupt you, because what I was actually asking you how to go is I was actually asking you, because that how the report went, man, for you.
Yeah. I'm getting
before we get into the numbers and all that, yeah.
Yeah, no, the report went great. It takes a little bit longer every year, you know, more and more breweries to count, but we got a great team here. You know, shout out to the team that supports me at the Brewers Association. So it feels good to have it come together.
Well, do me a favor, Bart, because and listeners, obviously, who have heard you on before know, but will you tell us who is the Brewers Association? What do you represent? And just a brief bit on the org.
Yeah, the Brewers Association is the national not-for-profit trade association that represents America's small and independent craft brewers. So our mission is to protect craft brewers, their beers, and the community of brewing enthusiasts. Also run the American Home Brewers Association. But our role is to provide what craft brewers can't provide for themselves. So lobbying, statistics, technical resources. We're a trade org, and we're trying to help small brewers do what they do better.
Got it. Very cool. And you're the chief economist. So tell us, I mean, that kind of speaks for itself, but what is your role?
I do all things numbers. So, you know, obviously the survey we just talked about, an annual report on production, you know, benchmarking stats, support for economic impact analysis at the state and federal level, you know, always talking with the Louisiana Brewers Guild as well about, you know, needs they have, data needs. So basically if there's something to quantify in the brewing industry, that's my job.
Got it. Very cool. And it's actually, Bart, it's good to see this is the first time I've ever seen you back in the office, because every time I think you've been on the show before, it was either during COVID or maybe right before COVID, you were still probably, I think, in your home office. So everybody's back. Everybody's doing what they normally do pretty much.
I won't say everyone. Okay. I'm probably one of two people in the office here today because we're still in a flexible schedule, but you know, we're definitely starting to trickle back in. Boulder's starting to be more open for business. So it's nice to start get back to normal, and I'm just itching to get out there and see our brewery members around the country.
So. Yeah, we were talking about that before we went on the air, man, about just travel in general. And I'm sure that's one of the best parts of your job, right? Is just getting out and going to see people and actually put, you know, the faces behind the numbers, if you will. And it's been a while, right? Or you said you did a little bit. You've done a little travel.
Yeah, I started to do a little bit, but you know, yeah, one of the best parts of my job and one of the most important, you know, when you have a national number, a national average, you know, 8% growth, you know, it tells you one thing, but you really get the nuance, you get the understanding, you really can see under the numbers when you start, you know, sitting down with a beer, with a brewer, you know, in a place and you learn about what's different there, what their real challenges are, you know, how that number doesn't tell the full story. I'm sure we're going to talk about some supply chain or cost of goods things at some point during this. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it just because, you know, brewers are great people. It's great to talk with them. But you learn a lot, too, as you go to different places on how different the story nationally can be at the local level.
That makes a lot of sense. And actually, and you said something important, too, right? Part of the perks of the job is you get to go out and taste some great beer at the breweries.
Yeah, and that's important, too. I mean, you know, part of my job is to track trends. And, you know, if I'm only drinking at my local brewery, I only know that brewery's trends. I don't know what's going on nationally, some of the cool things that people are trying, you know, hearing from brewers about that new style, whether they think it's a flop or not. You know, you learn a lot just drinking in breweries and trying new stuff about, you know, what people are excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and we'll touch on that a little bit later because I always like to ask you, because sometimes what we do, Bar, you've been on, like I said, usually a couple times a year. So we, last couple times anyway, at this time of year, we've done the sort of a look back of the previous year, which is what we're focusing on today. And then usually come on a little bit later in the year and we'll talk about some trends and some other things, but I'm sure I'll ask you some of that stuff that you're seeing. But yeah, let's jump in, man, because you sent me the stuff, the synopsis on the 2021 year. And kind of where I thought we would start is, you know, I think maybe focus on the good, because overall, a good year, certainly not hard to be better than 2020, but nuanced like all of these things. And I'll hit you with one of your quotes in a little bit. But let's start there, man. You mentioned that it's an 8% overall growth for the craft industry market over 2020, which is obviously a good number. So maybe unpack that a little bit. But then I also, the thing that intrigued me a bit too, was that the market share for craft beer went up nearly 1% from 12.2 to 13.1. That's got to be a good thing.
Yeah, both of those are good things. And both of those, I think, fundamentally come from the same place, which is 2020 really sucked for craft brewers, mostly because draft beer just went away. And, you know, right. Draft beer, you know, craft brewers sell a lot of packaged beer too. Don't get me wrong, but draft beer is the lifeblood for many, and they just have much higher share there. So, you know, craft brewers are selling a lot more in bars and restaurants than they are, you know, proportionally than they are in grocery stores. And so 2020, that goes away, and that's crushing for craft brewers. In 2021, we didn't fully get back to where we were, but that came back. And so that's good for craft brewers. That's what's driving that growth. And that's what also is driving share, where, you know, you have this channel, bars and restaurants, where craft brewers have, let's say, a third of the volume. If that comes back, that's going to raise their share overall. And that's really what we saw in 21, is that bars, restaurants, brew pubs, tap rooms got back to pretty close to where they had been, if not exceeding it in some of those channels. And that was good for small brewers around the country.
Okay, cool. So, and I know like 2019, because you and I have talked about 2019 before, was a good year, and 2020 came in pretty solid to start before COVID hit. How would you say, so maybe if we take 2020 out as an anomaly, I think that's fair to do. How did 2021, just from the perspective of, say, market share and overall growth, how did that look ballpark versus 2019?
Getting back close, still okay. A little bit below. So, you know, we're still a little bit below where we were in 2019. And again, that a lot of that's explained by what I was just talking about with that channel shift, and the draft beer's not fully back. So if we look late in 21, things were much, much better than they had been. But around the country nationally, and again, variation place to place, draft beer was still 15 to 20% below where it was in 2019. Okay. So we're getting back out there. But, and I think you see this, right? You go to almost any city or town and things are getting much, much busier than they were. But they're not maybe as hopping as they were in 2019. And you know, New Orleans is a tourist spot, I'm sure, is feeling that. You see that in the travel and the plane numbers. You know, we're still not having traveling as many passengers, you know, based on TSA data as we were before. And I think we're getting there. I think the middle of this year, and we can talk about forecasts in a minute, but I think we're going to get back to where we were, but we're still not quite there yet. And that means that 21 was still a little bit below 2019.
Gotcha. Okay. And so one of the things that you guys also put out was that the overall beer market was up about 1%. So, I mean, I guess that's good news. And so we had 29.6 billion. Is that right? So yeah. How does that look? I mean, is that a good, again, maybe taking out 2020, is that a decent number? Okay.
Yeah, that's a good number. I mean, you know, people are getting back. And again, a lot of that spending number is driven by bars and restaurants. So people are getting back out there. They're spending money. We see this in national, you know, government data too on overall spending, that, you know, restaurant spending has come back to the trend it was on. So that's a good sign. I'm sure lots of restaurateurs are starting to breathe sighs of relief as their business comes back. But, you know, we're starting to get back there. And I think, you know, if I was to summarize kind of this year, it was most of the way back, and hopefully it's the step that we need before getting fully back in 22. And while the first quarter's been, I think, pretty weak for a lot of reasons, we still kind of had that hangover from, you know, variants and more COVID. Right. I think this late spring and summer is going to be a great beer selling season. I think there's a lot of pent-up demand, and hopefully 22 numbers when we announce them next year at this time are going to show that we're back and growing again.
Awesome. So let me ask you this question too, because when we're talking about the overall beer, the retail market and sort of the importance, and you mentioned this with draft beer and then on premise. So one, it's volume, right? But then you say as well that it has a higher retail value. Am I reading it correctly that, you know, basically you're paying more for a pint in a restaurant than you are for buying a 16 ounce or a 12 ounce in a store?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. Okay. And, you know, that margin's just much higher, right? There's a higher service level. Everybody knows this intuitively, right? You're going to pay more if you buy a couple beers at the bar than if you take a six pack and take it home. And, you know, that's less important for brewers directly, but, you know, is important for kind of the wider ecosystem and the economy. You know, all those bars and restaurants support a ton of jobs. But, you know, people are kind of shocked. I mean, before COVID, bars and restaurants are only about 20% of the beer volume, but they're more than half the dollars that people spend on beer. So that's an incredibly important channel kind of overall for beer. And it's great to see it. It's getting back to where it was. Hopefully soon it will be back to where it was.
Gotcha. Cool. And you mentioned this jobs. So jobs were up 25% from 20, which that people may go, wow, 25%, that's great. I'm sure that's also a nuanced number, or it has to be relative to what was happening before.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's good news, bad news. I mean, the good news is those jobs came back. The bad news is they were bouncing back on percentage terms so high because a lot of brewers had to make tough cuts in 2020, as you know, they had to close their tap rooms, brew pub, et cetera. So the really good news is that's one number that is now above 2019, partly because we have more breweries, the brewery number grew. So on a per brewery basis, that might look a little bit more equal to 2019, but the jobs numbers come back strongly. And I think that shows some of the optimism that brewers have too, that they're hiring for that growth they see coming. They're, you know, they're seeing business in their brew pubs and tap rooms again. And so that's a really good sign for the industry going forward that, you know, brewers are hiring, they're getting those jobs back and people are excited to work there again.
Very cool. Awesome. This is good news. Let me ask you this question, Barton. I meant to ask you this at the top. How do you guys, and how do we define craft beer versus not craft beer? How does that number break down? How do those numbers work?
Yeah, so we understand that, you know, craft beer might get defined differently by different people. So we define the brewer, and we define a brewer as a small and independent brewer. So we have a volume threshold, 6 million barrels, about 3% of the U.S. beer market. And then use an independent definition that says you can't be more than 25% owned by a non-craft brewer. So if Anheuser-Busch takes 30% stake in you, we no longer consider you independent and you wouldn't be counted in these numbers. So Our stats are just those independent brewers. We're not trying to parse what beers they make. You know, if it's a American Light Lager or an IPA, it's all beer made by a small and independent brewer to us. And that's how we do it.
Got it. Okay. Thank you for clearing that up. Because I think people do ask me that sometimes, and I know you've mentioned or defined this for us before, but I mean, I guess that definition could be somewhat arbitrary, right? Depending on who you're asking.
Yeah. You know, different people are going to have different definition. Obviously we're an organization of brewers run by brewers for brewers. So we think of it at the brewer level. There's other organizations that think of it at the beer level. And so, you know, maybe we'll include the IPAs that are made by Anheuser-Busch in a craft definition and won't include, you know, the lagers that are made by small brewers in that category. But we do it at the brewery level. We think that makes sense to us. That makes sense to our members because they're thinking about it, you know, relative to their peers.
Got it. Okay, cool. So, you know, I was going to get into this a little bit later from another angle, but I was reading something else that you were talking about total operating breweries, and it was 9,247, which is up from 9,025 in 20. And we'll get to that in maybe the next segment, but it was making me think that, so 9,247 operating breweries, of which 9,118 are craft by your definition. And that just like drove home the point, right, where you're talking about 3% of the market, because you're going, well, it's only like 130 breweries, right? Or operating breweries, that difference. And that, so 130 big guys, and then all the rest are craft. That's a really interesting way to look at it, I think.
Yeah. You know, I mean, people talk about how many deals there have been and acquisitions, but you know, the vast majority of breweries are still small and independent. And the beer industry is still one where you have this long tail with lots and lots of breweries and a very concentrated, you know, kind of few companies that dominate at the top. So the top three companies are still 70% of the U.S. beer market.
Wow. Okay.
The bottom 75% of companies are still 0.5% of the U.S. beer market. And you really have this kind of long tail. So you're right. I mean, 99% plus of breweries in the U.S. are small and independent. And even with large brewers, brine breweries, the vast, vast majority fall under our craft brewer definition.
Wow. Okay. The top three are 70%. When we look at the global picture, so when we start talking about InBev and all those people, does that hold the same? Are we talking about like 3, 4, 5 or kind of the lion's share of the world market?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's quite as concentrated if you looked at it globally, but there's, you know, 4 or 5 global brewers who are probably the majority of beer volume in the world. And, you know, these companies are enormous. I mean, you know, InBev, I haven't read their latest annual report to know their volume, but, you know, 450, 500 million barrels. I mean, that's, you know, they're two and a half times the total U.S. beer market, you know, globally. So they're making a tremendous amount of volume globally. And compared to the average, you know, brew pub, you know, these are just orders of magnitude different in size.
Yeah, that's what that joke, right? An old winery joke, but I think it works in the beer thing is, you know, so-and-so makes more in a day, or so-and-so has more fall off the back of the truck in a day than I make in a year.
Yeah, absolutely correct when you're comparing the size of these companies.
Got it. Well, let's do this, Bar. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back and we'll chat a little bit more, I think, about sort of nuancing this a bit further. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the breakdown. We'll talk a little bit more about the total operating breweries. And we're going to get into a whole bunch of other stuff with Bart Watson, Friends, Chief Economist from the Brewers Association. Come on back.
Hey, everybody, Roger here with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Be sure to check out Nitty Grits Podcasts, a growing network of shows about food, drink, and culture. Visit southernfood.org for more.
I'm Liz Williams, host of Tip of the Tongue on the Nitty Grits Podcast Network. Join me and weekly guests for conversations about food and drink and the people who create food culture around the world. The show is for the curious, hungry for food knowledge. My new book, Nonna's Creole Italian Table, about the Sicilian community in New Orleans, can be pre-ordered from Amazon. Learn more about Nitty Grits Podcast Network at southernfood.org.
Up and dive, stop acting dead, cause we're alive, and drink Jack beer,
drink Jack beer,
good Jack beer,
good Jack beer,
hello mellow Jack, best beer in town.
Right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in. We're chatting with Bart Watson, Chief Economist from the Brewers Association, who have just put out their annual craft brew report for 2021, their production report. Always really, really interesting things to unpack. And Bart, as we were talking about 2020, a bad year, easy to say. And 2021 looking pretty good, but, and on our way back. And I think that's a very positive sign, as you were just discussing. But I think there was a really interesting quote in the report from you when, and I'll paraphrase here a little bit, but craft brewery sales rebounded in 2021. And we mentioned that this is lifted back by draft and on premise. But as you said, the mixed performance across business models, and geographies, as well as production levels, still lag 2019. And this suggests that breweries may still be in recovery mode. So can we kind of nuance what this means and maybe talk about some of the business models that look good and are trending good and maybe ones that are still lagging behind and just that sort of thing?
Yeah, and there's lots to unpack here.
Sure.
The first thing I would say is, different places have recovered more than others. I mean, you look at, the draft numbers, the traffic, just overall beer numbers even, and we still have a wide range in the U.S. from states that are selling more beer than they did before the pandemic to ones that are really still, well below where they were, parts of the West Coast, for example, that clearly just, consumers are treating COVID still a little bit more seriously than in other parts of the country or tourist spots. I mean, Hawaii, is a great example, had a terrible 20, bounced back in 19, but, still clearly struggling, from pent up demand, hopefully, but from lower travel and lower visitors than it had before. So that's on the geography. On the business model, again, brewers that were really draft heavy, we talked about this in the first segment, but, draft isn't always back fully. So still could be struggling a little bit. Brewers that had that package piece, maybe saw more of a bump last year and that's settling a little bit, but there's big variations there. And, the one other thing I would say too, in terms of, not overly being positive about this, is there's still some looming clouds and headwinds. We've got really rising costs in the supply chain. We've got brewers who are struggling to get basic raw materials right now. And so while it's great that we're getting back to where we were, this is pretty fragile. And it's worth remembering a lot of these companies took big financial losses, had to draw down their cash. And so, if you've already been sick, it doesn't take as much to kill you. And I think that's the state that a lot of brewers are in is, they're getting healthier, but it doesn't take as much now to push them over the edge if something else bad happens.
That's a really good point. And I think a good example that you just gave when we were talking about people that can do, craft brewers that are able to do packaging, meaning crowlers and growlers and so on and things like that, canning stuff. We were talking about that last time that you were on or the time before that you were on that, this was a way that people adapted in 2020 is that more people started to try and sell off premise or from their own space, but not have to consume it in their own space. So that makes it really difficult, right? So it's a recovery method. People maybe said, why the hell wasn't I doing this before and have adapted it. But like you said, it's very fragile. Are we seeing people still continue to embrace that part of the business model? And we still hopefully seeing that as a positive for diversification?
I think it's mixed. For some, it has been positive and they've been able to do that and they've been able to keep it and they've been able to grow it. I think for others, they've realized how competitive that business is, as the channels have swung back and they've had to struggle a bit more to sell packaged beer. that's also the place where some of the cost increases we're seeing, some of the supply shortages we're seeing are hitting the hardest. So, you know, you moved into cans and now presto changeo, cans cost 30% more and are harder to get. And, you know, I think it's been eye-opening to a lot of breweries who weren't in that space, just how competitive and how, you know, how fragile those kind of distribution pieces can be. So, I think it's generally, and I don't want to be overly pessimistic here. I think it's been a positive for many breweries. It's allowed them to grow their business, to find new things, but you know, they've also seen that they did this for a reason because things were really, really bad. And now that things aren't really, really bad, some brewers are saying, okay, is this worth the hassle anymore?
Got it. So some people are maybe actually pulling back from that and just going straight back to draft or something like that.
Yeah, certainly. You know, a lot of this is the tap room and brew pub. You know, if a brewery can get back to getting that tap room and brew pub, you know, really cranking and sell their beer that way, I mean, that's still the highest margin piece for most breweries. So, you know, doing that and giving up cans, you know, is something a lot of breweries have been happy to do.
Oh, that's really interesting. Okay, cool. So Bart, let's talk a little bit about, we touched on supply chain and all that. And so you did mention that this year is a critical year for many brewers. And I think we've really kind of elucidated quite a bit of that. But is there anything you want to add to that? I mean, because is it sort of, they need to continue trending forward. And if they don't, then we might be seeing people close up shop more.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, one other kind of piece of the puzzle that we haven't discussed is government support. You know, we had the government people in the helicopters throwing money out the sides and that, you know, that papered over a lot of stuff for a lot of businesses, you know, between PPP and RRF, the Paycheck Protection Program, and the Restaurant Revitalization Fund for those who aren't hip to those acronyms. You know, we saw the government pump, my estimate is $1.5 billion into breweries. Wow. And so, I mean, that was a big, you know, you have a leaking ship, the government patched over it, but now you're asking these breweries to sail these stormy seas, you know, without that support. And so if this is a year where they've really got to make sure that they can go at it alone without that support, that they've got to get back to those sales. Because I think at this point, I mean, there's still a chance we might see a little bit more RRF money, cross our fingers for that. Mm-hmm. But the government's largely done giving out COVID funds. So, you know, when I talk about this being a sink or swim year, or, you know, kind of make or break year for craft brewers, it's because now they're going to have to do it in the marketplace again. They're not going to have that government support. So if sales aren't back and that cash got drawn down during COVID, this is going to be a critical year for a lot of brewers.
Got it. With the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, I wasn't going to ask you this, but since we were talking about it, I was curious. I was going to actually ask you this offline. I think you mentioned somewhere in the report that certain craft breweries qualified for it and certain didn't. How did that guideline work? Are you aware? Like, did you have to be a restaurant and do food, or was it a broader definition?
It was a broader definition. So tap rooms qualified as well. And we worked actually very closely with the SBA on this and defining this. And basically they created some rules where you had to show that a large percentage of your sales were at your brewery and your brew pub or tap room, because this was intended as a hospitality support. The biggest challenge there was the government didn't allocate enough money. So, you know, we had X number of companies apply and some of them got money and some of them didn't. And so, you know, I think the number is about 1500 breweries got money. But you know, who knows how many applied? Maybe it was 3,000, maybe it was 4,000. And so you had a bunch of companies that needed that money, didn't get it. We're hopeful that more money might get put in. Right before we recorded this, a couple days ago, the House passed more funds for that. The Senate, we'll see if they do it as well. Right. But that was a lifeline for a lot of breweries. And we heard from a lot of brewery owners that I had gone deeply into debt during COVID and that wiped it away and allowed me a fresh start. So we're hopeful that's offered to every business in the hospitality sector that needed it. Not just, you know, breweries, but, you know, bars, restaurants, there's lots of businesses could use that support.
Absolutely. And I know your business is not speculating like I would do here, but, you know, if 1500 breweries got it and we were talking about over 9,100 craft breweries, I am sure many, many, many applied and didn't get it. So that would not be a stretch or a leap of logic there to assume at all. Well, let's do this, Bart. We got a couple, you know what, let's take a break now and then we'll just do a little bit longer segment next coming up. So I want to talk a little bit more about interesting stuff with how more breweries actually opened and closures were down, which is also a good thing, but also a nuanced thing, I think. And you're going to stick around for our podcast only segment, Another Shot with Nola Drinks, where I think we're going to talk about some of the top 50 lists that you guys put together. And we're also going to talk a little bit about 2022. So we'll take a little break here on the Nola Drink Show, friends. We're chatting with Bart Watson, Chief Economist from the Brewers Association. Come on back.
Well, going down to the barroom, buying me a jug of wine. Yes, going down to the barroom, buying me a jug of wine. till the end of time.
The next time you're on Frenchman Street, let the sound of live music lead you to Midnight Revival, where the night is always young. Find your spot at the bar or by the stage with your new favorite drink in hand. Live music that pairs perfectly with our lineup of tropical drinks and classic New Orleans cocktails. See what's on the menu at midnightrevival.com. Find out who is playing by following us on Instagram at Midnight Revival NOLA. Find us at 417 Frenchman Street in the Frenchman Hotel, and we'll see you soon for some sips and sounds.
Hi, Brian Diaz, host of the NOLA Drink Show here. Check out Nitty Grits Podcasts, a growing network of food, drink, and culture shows. Visit southernfood.org for more.
Well, my bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer. Well, I'm standing on a corner with the bucket in my hand. I'm just looking for a woman that ain't got no man. My bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Deuce here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have you here. We're chatting with Bart Watson, chief economist from the Brewers Association. Always a pleasure to have you on, Bart. Thank you for making time. Happy Friday as we tape this.
Happy Friday to you.
Thank you.
Have that first happy hour beer soon.
Yeah, we were just talking about that during, I'm going to do the exact same thing, my friend, when we get out of here doing this. Let's talk a little bit about it was interesting, Bart, because, you know, all-time high of craft breweries, 9,118, as we touched on before. So actually, you know, openings were up and closings were down. That sounds good, right? But it's probably not as simple as that, is it?
Yeah, and first, you know, we still had more openings and closings, but openings were down from the year before, and that continues a trend we've seen for a couple of years. So, you know, I'm going to round the numbers, you know, not use exact, but, you know, you go back a couple of years and we had about 1,200 brewery openings a year, and then the next year it was 1,000, and last year it was 800, and this year we're closer to 600. So what we're seeing, I think, is just a maturing market where we've got lots of breweries in this country. You know, lots of little towns have gotten their brewery that they can support, and that's starting to dwindle off. And we're going to see openings and closings, but those are going to be a little bit more in balance. The good news is on the closing side that we didn't see a huge rash of closings. 2020 was our highest number wise, you know, closing year of all time. Not as high a percentage as some of the kind of worst years we've seen in past history. But I think, you know, some of that is that, you know, as things improve, brewery wanted to hold on, try on a little bit longer. And two was, as we already talked about, we got some government support. So, you know, businesses that might've had to fail, you know, got a check from the government and that helped them continue. You know, we'll see whether 22 that can continue. You know, I'm dubious that we can see this low closing rate given, you know, all the turmoil, the cost rising in the marketplace. So, you know, we'll see whether that rises in 22 and whether 21 was a little bit of an anomaly in terms of how low those closings were.
Because that was buffered up. Okay. That makes a whole lot of sense. Let me ask you this too then. So with the number of openings, so we have microbreweries and I'll just roughly what 1900, 3,300 brew pubs, 3,700 tap rooms, and then 223 regional craft breweries. Can you tell me like of those four categories briefly, what those mean and then just kind of where, like who's doing better? And maybe that gives us some trends of where this is going, of who's going to be more successful this year, next year, moving forward.
Yeah, so we'll start with the smallest two, tap rooms and brew pubs. These are both breweries that sell, you know, they make the majority of their money on site, maybe not the majority of volume. We use a 25% volume threshold for each, but, you know, they're selling a lot of beer on site, and that's where their business is really driven. Tap rooms are no food, brew pubs are food. That's the distinction there. And that's the category, you know, tap rooms in particular that has really grown the most. You can tell it in the numbers, but it's also been, you know, kind of the one that's really driven the openings. It's the lowest cost point of entry. Okay. It's a model that people are excited about, you know, kind of matches the experiential drinking that people are into. Next up is microbreweries. Those are small production breweries. So a production brewery, less than 15,000 barrels, looking to distribute, but, you know, not huge, normally distributing in one state or maybe even just a city. And then you've got above that, what we call regional craft breweries, which that's above 15,000 barrels, multi-state, typically some of them are only one state, but, you know, multi-state, wider distribution. And, you know, it's a little hard to answer the question of kind of who's doing best, because in many ways, all of their numbers are just the flip of last year. The people who fell the most last year, the brew pubs and tap rooms, have bounced back the strongest. I might say the tap rooms are doing a little bit better. They saw less of a hit last year and saw similar growth to brew pubs this year. So that might be the category that's kind of succeeding and thriving the most. And then micros and regionals grew a little bit more slowly, but often were able to package last year and so didn't see quite as much of a hit. So okay. It's a little bit of a complicated to say who's doing best. That said, if we want to say who's opening the most, clearly the winner is tap rooms. That has been the most popular model. It was a model that really didn't even exist. We didn't track it as a category until about 5 years ago, but it's just exploded in popularity as more breweries have really focused on that production, you know, production to sell in-house, and don't worry about the food piece because that's complicated and messy.
Got it. Okay, so that makes sense. And that I was just going to ask you why maybe tap rooms are doing better than breweries, but it's a streamlined business model. It's a streamlined presentation, more session drinking, right? You can go visit two or three of these in a day as opposed to doing lunch and beers.
And I think we've seen a lot of them take advantage of just kind of changes in how we eat and drink. You know, you park a food truck outside and you've got food now without having a kitchen. You know, you put, you know, just we welcome DoorDash on your door and, you know, people can bring food into the tap room. So, you know, there's lots of ways for people now to eat and drink in your place, even if you don't have a kitchen. And I think tap rooms have seen that for a lot of them, and not all breweries, obviously still people are opening brew pubs, but that's just a simpler business model. They don't need that cost and people are still excited to come visit them.
That makes a whole lot of sense. And I'm assuming too, that when we talk about say the regional craft breweries or in the micro breweries, their slower growth is what you were saying before, that it's a more mature market. Aside from some of the other factors that we've already touched on, just a more mature market, and you and I have talked about this before on the show, that this is just a normal trajectory for any business. When you enjoy, you know, a decade plus of double-digit growth, that no industry sustains that, right, ever.
Exactly. And some of that double-digit growth, which is getting into new places, right? You're in the grocery store is expanding its selection. They're adding more tap handles. That store, which never carried craft, is carrying it now. And I don't want to say that stopped, but it's certainly slowed. You know, craft is luckily everywhere. I mean, this is a great thing that, you know, it's a mature market that you can get a good beer just about anywhere they sell beer. And so what I think we've seen is that category has settled into, as you say, kind of a more mature competitive marketplace that's still growing, but now is growing, you know, by taking away share from other people. You know, it has to grow kind of store on store, year over year. And so we should expect slower growth rates for craft in general, but that category in particular going forward.
Right. Okay. And you mentioned that. So year over year growth, and we have talked about this, but so craft beer has continued to gain, even though the rate has slowed, has continued to gain market share for a really long time, hasn't it? In the overall beer market.
With the exception of last year, I mean, it's gained market share basically every year it's been in existence. You know, we've seen production grow and that's been part of a larger premiumization of the beer market. So craft isn't the only segment that's been growing. Imports have been growing. You know, what people are starting to call this fourth category, you know, things that are in cans that aren't beer, you know, seltzers, FMBs, you know, now, you know, kind of ready to drink spirits, hard kombucha, you know, cider, you know, name whatever it is, has been growing pretty consistently for a long time. And we continue to see this movement in beer where people maybe are drinking a little bit less beer on average, but they're drinking higher priced, what they see is, you know, more differentiated beer. And that's been continuing for decades.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think that trend fits into the larger tapestry of people are not quite as, monolithic in the way that they drink. So the same thing applies to wine and spirits. People are enjoying premium stuff across all categories as opposed to just saying, I'm just a beer drinker, I'm just a gin drinker, I'm just a Chardonnay drinker.
I've been trying to coin the term omnibibulous for these drinkers. Yeah, so feel free to steal that going forward.
Full credit for you though, for sure.
Yeah, and this is particularly true of craft drinkers. You know, craft drinkers are people who they're discoverers. They want to experiment. They want innovation. And so, you know, I mean, that's an awesome opportunity, right? To draw people into the category. It's also a threat for craft brewers because there are lots of, you know, small, you know, liquor companies starting up. There's lots of new offerings always in, you know, kind of beverage alcohol. And so, you know, it shows how craft brewers need to keep innovating and they need to keep thinking about kind of the customer first if they're going to keep those people interested.
Got it. I think that's a really good point. It's a really interesting point as well, because people, I mean, you hear this, people want stories, people want, you know, they're probably not drinking quite as much volume in certain situations. What about, we got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, Bart, before we close out this portion of the show. We use the term sessionability. Are we seeing that more? I think we're definitely seeing that more with craft beer, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. You know, I think one thing we're seeing is that people are just more aware of ABV, of alcohol by volume in general, you know, whether that's at the high end or the low end. And they're really thinking about kind of occasions more intentionally. And that's been good at both ends, you know, so double IPAs are still selling very well, but more sessionable stuff is too. And I think that's only going to grow too, as we have, you know, the millennials who, you know, now starting to be in their early 40s, you know, millennials aren't kids anymore, you know, looking to slow down maybe a little bit when they're doing their happy hour drinking on Friday, pick some more sessionable things. And we're starting to see it show up in the numbers. It's not huge, you know, IPA is still driving a lot of the growth, but we're starting to see a collection of lagers, of, you know, blonde ales, of Kolsches, you know, things like that kind of start to move the market. And I think that's going to be a big part of craft going forward. You know, sessionability has always been part of beer's appeal relative to wine and hard liquor. And so I think going forward, that's going to be a place that craft brewers are going to look to play. Lagers still the dominant part of the overall beer market. For craft to grow, that sessionable space is a big one, and one that I think a lot of brewers are really interested in right now.
Yeah, very good. And one that I'm very happy to see. We'll talk a little bit more, Bart, in our podcast only segment, Another Shot with Nolan Drinks, about 2022 and some trends that you're seeing and things like that. And we're going to talk a little bit about the top 50 lists of craft beers and overall breweries in the country. But very quickly, can you tell people where we can connect with you, the Brewers Association, and all that good stuff?
Yeah, sure. So brewersassociation.org is the site for all the stats and learning about the Brewers Association. If you're an enthusiast or want to make beer, you can also check out AmericanHomebrewersAssociation.org. You know, great way to learn or make your own beer. If you can make soup, you can make beer. And then you can connect with me on Twitter at BrewersStats, two S's there in the middle. You'll get lots of geeky beer graphs and other news that you didn't know you needed until you join.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. You're a great Twitter follow. I say that every time you come on the show. So if you're into beer, follow Bart on Twitter. Friends, if you are listening on the radio, I do appreciate it. Go to NolaDrinks.com, get the podcast. You're going to hear our next segment there. It's the only place you're going to be able to hear it where I continue the conversation with Bart. But I do appreciate you, all you radio listeners out there. Thank you very much. Remember to be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all. Everybody, have another shot with Nolan Drinks. Thanks for sticking around, friends. Hope you're enjoying our conversation with Bart Watson from the Brewers Association. We're going to continue that conversation right now. Here we go. All right, everybody, thanks for sticking around for another shot with Nolan Drinks. Chatting with Bart Watson, Chief Economist from the Brewers Association. And we're going to talk a little bit about 2022, some things that you're anticipating and already seeing, Bart. And we're going to talk in just a second here about the two top 50 lists you guys put out in your 2021 report. But I did want to ask you this question. I just saw this on the website and I thought it was pretty cool, so I wanted to flag it to people's attention. The Craft Brewers Conference that you guys are putting on May 2nd through the 5th in Minneapolis coming up. Can you give us a little bit about that? Just like, yes. What is it? What do you guys do there? I guess it's probably a good thing to do.
What don't we do? It's you know, it's the It's the preeminent conference for beer and brewing in North America. You know, huge trade expo. So anything you would ever need to buy for a brewery, we'll be able to find there. You'll find lots of brewers walking around looking for new shiny toys. But a huge educational program as well. So something, you know, someone on my team, Mackenzie Staples, works on very hard all year, you know, but top quality speakers across a wide variety of, you know, business topics, technical topics, you know, so education, networking, you know, trade show. And it's become the event that the brewing community in North America gets together. There's lots of offsites. There's lots of, you know, beers outside the conference as well. So it's a great event. It's great that it's back in its normal slot and we can hold it.
That's really cool. So trade conference, right? So it's open to trade. People can attend if you're in any facet of the trade.
Yeah. You know, in theory, if you want to pay the registration fee, anybody can come in, but I'm guessing it's not one that people off the street are going to want to, but if you're in Minneapolis, there's going to be lots of tap takeovers and other stuff. So it's certainly something that the beer lovers of the city that we are in, I think, get to appreciate as well.
That sounds really fun. I may hit you up for a media credential if you don't mind, Bart.
Sounds good.
Cool. So Bart, let's talk a little bit, before we get into some 2022 stuff, I wanted to talk about, I'm looking over here at my screens. You guys put out, and I don't recall, maybe you did the top 50 craft breweries before. And did you do the top 50? You did the top 50 overall breweries this time, and you did that before as well? Okay.
Yep. Yeah. We've done that for, I don't know how many years in a row, but a long time.
Okay. And it's a really cool list, and it's really interesting to look at. And I actually got tripped up on it briefly because you guys did a map and they had like the numbers. And I was looking at Louisiana, which is of course where we are. And I saw the number 16 and I'm like, man, wait, we have 16 top 50 craft breweries in Louisiana. I mean, I know we're doing well in this state and things are moving along. Then I read more carefully. It's Abita is number 16, which kind of leads me to my question. So when you look at the list, when you look at the craft beer list, you and I were talking about this before we went on the air. I think if you're into beer and you look at those 50 breweries on the top craft list, you know, you're going to know most of who these people are because you're just into beers and the name of the company is the name of the beer, I guess is probably a fair way to put it. So, you know, when we look at Abita, just to put them as an example, you know, they're in about 40 plus states, if I'm not mistaken, as of a few years ago, I know they were. So they're a regional craft brewery still, but they're pretty big, right? So they fit on this list. But if you look at the top 50 list, there's something like 25, I think. Yep, 25. So that's an interesting kind of, I think, way to look at the playing field, that you can be 16 on craft, but 25 on the overall top 50.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this in the radio segment. But yep. I mean, the scale and scope here is so different. I mean, you know, Abita's on the same list as Anheuser-Busch, but, you know, they're on a different scale in terms of how much, you know, beer they are selling around the country. So, yeah, this is always a really interesting list to put together because it's a diverse set of companies, you know, some of them global, some of them in only one state, you know, New Glarus is only in Wisconsin. And so you get, you know, just this huge range of company experience and what they're doing. But, you know, these are the companies that make beer in the U.S. and here they are in order.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating list, and it's really kind of fun. You guys have a map so you can see who's where, and you look at, say, somebody like Gordon Beer, number 15, and I mean, you obviously they do well with their beer, but they've kind of come from that brew pub market space, right?
And actually, those are two separate companies. So this is one that not a lot of people know, but the packaging company split with the brew pub company. I don't know exactly when, but those are now two, despite the fact they have the same name and you know, share very similar logos, that those are two totally separate companies. You know, the brew pub's on one side and the packaging company on the other.
Oh, no way. I had no idea. Okay, that's interesting. I remember actually you and I have discussed before, I grew up in the Bay Area. I remember going to their very first place in the South Bay in the Bay Area when they originally opened up. I'm dating myself here slightly. Well, so what I wanted to ask you too on like the overall, the 50, not craft beers, but the overall brewery list, that list is a little bit different than the craft ones. Cause you're looking at, like I said, in the craft ones, you'll know these names if you're into beer, or almost all of them, one would assume. But then when you start looking at the overall breweries, I'm looking at some of these names and I'm going, I have no idea who they are. So like FIFCO USA, or one that's on both lists that I thought was really interesting, and I do know who they are, but Canarchy. And can you tell people who Canarchy are? Because they've actually made great strides in recent years, haven't they?
Yeah, you know, so a lot of these are, you know, companies that own other companies, and both of these are ones that's true, you know. FIFCO USA is a Costa Rican company actually that has a US arm, and you know, they make Genesee in the US as a brand that people might recognize. But they're also an import company, you know, import Labatt's. And they do have a wide variety of things. So this used to be called North American Breweries, and they own some craft brands as well, but they've rebranded as FIFCO. Canarchy is a group of small breweries that kind of banded together, you know, through the help of private equity to do joint purchasing. The name Canarchy comes from the fact that these are all can breweries. So Oscar Blues, you know, the original kind of craft can brewery is one, but Cigar City, Squatters and Wasatch, Perrin, Deep Ellum. So you got a mix of companies across that portfolio. Previously Three Weavers, though Three Weavers has dropped out, and they're an interesting one for people who follow the beverage industry, because they just got bought by Monster Beverage. A very big non-beer company coming into the craft beer space, which is, you know, people are very interested to watch how that plays out, because that's a very different acquisition of a craft brewery than we've ever seen. We've seen beer companies buy these craft breweries. We've seen alcohol companies buy these craft breweries, but this is the first just general beverage, you know, energy drink company buying one of these companies. So we'll see how that plays out in the future.
That's really interesting, because you definitely see some people like Topo Chico moving into the hard seltzer space. And so that's really fascinating. And when you mentioned just now, large alcohol company. So number six on the overall list is Diageo, who, if it's fermented, they own something.
Yeah. And Guinness is their big beer brand,
right?
Which everyone will recognize immediately. But yeah, they're a total beverage company, a total beverage alcohol company. So they've got, if you name a beverage, they've got something that they sell in it. Yeah, and it's probably one of the big global brands.
It probably is one of the big global brands indeed. And I don't want to flog this one too much, but you're mentioning FIFCO being a Costa Rican company with their US arm, and you mentioned there being an importer. Are they the ones that are responsible for a lot more of the Latin American beers that we're now seeing on the market, or do you know that?
That's a good question. You know, some of them, I mean, some of those are going to be owned by, all these global companies have brands that they're bringing up,
sure.
You know, so, you know, Anheuser-Busch is going to own some of them as well. So, you know, it really depends on which of the ones you're talking about. But certainly that's something we're seeing, you know, those global companies do, is they're trying to find, you know, which is the new hot import that we can bring to the US and we can scale up and maybe even make here at some point. I mean, you know, it's one of the things that's been interesting to watch. We're getting a little far afield here, but it's like, sure. You know, Stella's getting made in the U.S. now. So,
right,
I mean, that's
right.
Part of the playbook of these large companies is you find a brand, you bring it to the U.S. If it sells well, you start making it here, because it's just so much cheaper than, you know, shipping water around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just, what popped into my head is I've been seeing more and more Central American beers in some of the larger retailers around, like Gallo, and I'm forgetting the Nicaraguan one that I've recently seen, but ones I used to live in that part of the world, and ones I used to drink down there and would never see them outside of the borders of their own country. We're now seeing them here.
I think people are looking for new, different, you know, kind of things that, you know, just aren't the standard. And obviously, you know, the big brand, you know, Modelo is, you know, a dominant,
sure,
huge brand in the US here, but companies and consumers are always looking for what's the next cool niche thing. And I think, you know, Latin American beers are, you know, some companies are trying to make that a niche.
Yeah, makes sense. Cool. So really cool list. And I would encourage, you know, folks to go to the website and check it out, because it's just kind of, it's fun reading, and it's fun to look at some of the big guys and just sort of see who crosses. I was just so fascinated to see who found themselves, like we mentioned, Abita, Canarchy, some of these other ones that we see on both lists. And I just find that really, really interesting. But keep in mind, as Bart has warned us here, that the top, it's top heavy. That the main list is very, very top heavy. Well, what about 2022, Bart? We're about 3 months in, so I know we probably haven't seen the first quarter numbers. Final numbers are probably still raw, but kind of, what are you thinking, man? What are we seeing this year, just from, like, say, a growth perspective, then maybe just even a trend perspective?
Yeah, I'm still hopeful we're going to see growth, and it's going to be, you know, decent growth, you know, stronger than kind of what we were seeing before COVID. But, you know, I think there are some warning signs. You know, the first quarter of the year in grocery store sales and scan data was kind of weak. Who knows how much of that's just, you know, inflation eating into people's budgets, you know, hangover from, you know, Omicron variants, you know, who knows what it was, but some of those sales were weak. The hopeful positive thing is that meant people were buying more draft beer, and that's why grocery store sales were coming down. But we don't have, the data aren't always synced and kind of when they come in. So we don't right. know that yet, but I think we're going to have a good summer. I mean, you know, I think people are ready. We're starting to see the travel numbers tick back up. You know, this is a total tangential one, but I just saw hotel occupancy is back to where it was, you know, kind of before the pandemic. So, you know, kind of a sign again, people are moving around, they're taking vacations, and And I think that's going to be good for beer, and it's going to be good for craft beer because, you know, when people travel, that's when they, you know, they want something special. When they go out to bars and restaurants, that's when they're buying draft, and that's a craft occasion. So I'm hopeful we're going to see growth. It's going to be, you know, get us back above 2019 and then some, and you know, that when we look back on this year, hopefully that will offset some of the challenges that are coming, like inflation, supply chain challenges. But we'll see. It's, you know, it's going to be an interesting 6 months. And as we've already talked about, I think it's going to be make or break for some brewers. Some brewers are going to say, I didn't make enough of a recovery this year, and now is as good a time as any to hang it up.
Yeah, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, right? That makes a lot of sense. Let me ask you this question, just as it pops in my head. We're talking about travel, and we start to use the word beer tourism more. And we obviously know we can kind of put COVID aside because we know what that did to travel in general. Are you guys starting to kind of look at that as its own thing and take that into account a little bit? Or are you kind of maybe even just say defining a place like New Orleans or Hawaii, as you mentioned before, knowing that plays into their reality?
Yeah, you know, we've tracked this kind of tangentially. We do a big national consumer survey that we do every year. And we ask people, how many breweries did you visit more than 2 hours away from your house? And we don't really differentiate between, I mean, there's kind of two types of beer tourism, right? There is, I am going to Santa Rosa for Pliny the Younger. Like, this is a beer, right, this is a, right, beer trip.
A,
you know,
a beer pilgrimage? We can call, yeah, that for Pliny the Younger, I think.
I don't think there's too much of that out there. I think there's a lot more of, I am going to X place, and oh, on the way, I'm going to swing by these breweries because I know they're there. I'm going to pick up some beer to bring home, or and I'm hopeful that is going to come back, and we're going to see that in the numbers this year. You know, I think it's hard to know how people are going to prioritize. I'm sure a lot of people, I'm one, I have a long list of places that I didn't get in the last 2 years that I'm now like overdue to get to. So how people prioritize that and where beer fits into that, I don't really know, but sure. That's something we've been aware of for a while that does drive, you know, a lot of breweries. You know, obviously general tourism and the spillover effects are really important for key places. Hawaii is one, you know, we've talked about a couple times. You know, New Orleans is another. I mean, sure, without tourists, you know, New Orleans is just not going to sell as many drinks as it would otherwise.
Absolutely.
So that's something I've watched very carefully throughout the pandemic, and we are starting to see it come back, and I'm hopeful it'll be something that by mid-year this year is going to be fully back.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question, if only because I start to, like, I'll use Southeast Louisiana just as an example because I'm familiar with it. I can't recall, I think we're at like 36, 37, 40, maybe 40 breweries in this part of the world now. So we've seen a significant growth in the past 10 or 15 years in this part of the world of breweries. And I've just, you know, in recent years, met a lot of tourists. As you mentioned, it's a tourism driven location, just sitting at a brewery or sitting at a bar. I meet more and more people that are like, I am here to check out the local breweries. This is the motivation for their travel because, you know, people are promoting beer trails. We haven't really formalized that in this part of the world, but it's really easy just even within the city limits of New Orleans to get around to 7, 8, 9, 10 breweries and go hit their tasting rooms. And so I think it's a really interesting question because wine tourism has been something that's been studied pretty well for a long time. But that's why, simply just why I asked you. But yeah,
that, one of the cool advantages, you know, beer tourism has too. And I got invited to actually go to a conference on beer tourism, which who would imagine there'd be a conference on beer tourism? But is that so many places, you know, already have that embedded there. Whereas, you know, wine tourism, yes, there are wineries in all 50 states, but they're often, you know, kind of out of the cities and you really got to travel. And, you know, if you really want to do it right, there's a limited number of states you can go to. You can go to, right, almost any major city in the country at this point and do, you know, as many breweries you want in a day as you could feasibly do. So that's been cool. And it's cool to hear that, you know, Southeast Louisiana is being a place that people are putting on their map to go there and do that. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before I let you go, Bart, maybe give us a few nuggets on just what are some thoughts that you have, gut takes or whatever the numbers may be showing. We were talking a little bit about IPA, you know, IPA is still king in the craft brewery world in this country. You touched on things like lagers and Kolsch and some other things. What are some things that you're maybe seeing that we should be on the lookout for in 2022?
Yeah, I mean, styles are so tough because we really just seen it fracture so much in the last few years. Yeah. You know, when I did this 5 years ago, you could say like, oh, here is the style and it is growing and everybody's going to do that as their seasonal and it's going to grow. And I think that's harder than it used to be to do that. I continue to think sours is a place, you know, kind of what it is, whether it's, you know, fruit smoothie sours or, you know, light Berliner Weiss, you know, that still seems like a place that I think there's room to grow. It's a, you know, it's a place that kind of just is a different palate point from a lot of other beer, but that one that, you know, particularly kind of younger craft drinkers seem really excited about it. It's a good kind of base to do different fruits, different flavors. I think it plays into a lot of things. So I'm still excited to see that space grow. you know, I think we're going to see, you know, again, kind of more at that low ABV, you know, kind of lager space. And we're starting to see more differentiation there, right? People aren't coming out with a Pilsner. They're coming out with a Czech Pilsner, an Italian Pilsner, a German Pilsner, you know, that they're, the differentiation, I think, is something that helps craft drinkers get more into it too, right? When I can get into a space and I can start to see and understand the differences. That's the kind of thing that, you know, people who drink craft get into. So I think that's going to be helpful on there and grow as well. And beyond that, I mean, I think we're still just, you know, we're seeing people, a lot of people interested in flavors. You know, a lot of brewers don't love the pastry stouts or, you know, stuff like that. Right. But it's pretty clear the beer drinkers are still interested in those. And I think the most interesting spaces are where people are doing, you know, weird combination stuff. And they're, you know, they're not just kind of doing the same flavors as before, but they're taking it new places. So I think that still has room to run. That's still a place that, you know, people are excited about.
Yeah. Very cool. Awesome. I'm still waiting for the American Rausch beer category to blow up.
I do another podcast every year that gets released on April 1st, where we dive deep into to smoke beer stats. So this week in Rausch beer, check it out.
Hey, I like that. I'm definitely going to have to check it out. I'm a proponent, but I'm an outlier. You know that, Bart. Well, Bart, do me a favor. Tell people one more time where they can connect with you on Twitter and the Brewers Association and all that good stuff.
You can find out everything you want to know about the Brewers Association and more at brewersassociation.org. If you're an enthusiast or want to learn to make your own beer, AmericanHomebrewersAssociation.org. And if you want to learn more about me and see my nerdy beer graphs, follow me on Twitter at BrewersStats, two S's there in the middle.
Awesome. Bart, thank you so much, man. And I hope to see you down here soon now that we're back in planes and doing the do.
I need to get back. It's been too long. I definitely need a New Orleans trip.
Yeah, you and I have only known each other over Zoom. So we need to actually, you know, crack a can or get a draft together one of these days.
Amen.
Cool, man. Thanks, Bart. I appreciate it. Fred's a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back to close things out. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for joining me this week here on the NOLA Drink Show, friends, and another shot with NOLA Drinks. Happy to have had you here. Yeah, you know that. Great conversation with Bart. Always a pleasure to have him on, as we talked about during the interview. And we've kind of started to establish a bit of a pattern here where Bart joins us on the heels of putting out their annual production report, which is, you know, generally about this time of year every year. So we'll do that again, ideally, next year. And then we also like to bring Bart back usually in the fall to talk a little bit more about, get maybe a little bit of a read on what's happening in the current year, even though they haven't done their final report. Maybe we're not all the way through the final quarter or even into the final quarter of the year. But, you know, when we get through the summer months and things like that, they can make some pretty good prognostications, I think, or Bart can, of what's going on in the year in beer here in the United States and craft beer in particular. So be on the lookout for that. I'm sure that we will have Bart back on in a few months. Great show next week. Mentioned this at the top of the show. We're going to be at Midnight Revival, talking with a group of bartenders, including Patrick Williams, who runs the bar there. That is the new bar and music venue that opened in the Frenchman Hotel right there on Frenchman Street. Yeah, go figure. The Frenchman Hotel on Frenchman Street works out really well. Right next door to our good friends at Louisiana Music Factory. The hotel is located at 417 Frenchman Street. We're going to be there talking about their tropical drink program. They do the classics as well. And we're going to talk about the music venue because it's a really neat space in the hotel where they're going to have live music going on all the time, including, as I mentioned at the top of the show, one of the four first ever French Quarter Festival After Dark music events. There's a Sunday, April 24th, again, at the bar at Midnight Revival in their music venue in the Frenchman Hotel. Doors open at 7, features Holly Rock, and the music is from 8 to 11, and it's free. So go check that out. It's really cool. You can find out more information on their website, midnightrevivalnola.com. And you can also find out plenty of information about French Quarter Fest and these After Dark events also at the other locations each of the four nights. So kicking off on Thursday, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night, just go to FrenchQuarterFest.org. We are going to be out there covering French Quarter Fest. So when you are, well, depending on when, if you're hearing the podcast, French Quarter Fest might already be happening. But yeah, we're going to be out there. Can't wait. Starting on Thursday, there all 4 days. That's right. Friends, quick note. We've talked about this before on the show, but we always want to encourage you whenever we can, especially, you know, given that we had Bard on talking about the craft beer industry in the United States, support your local breweries, right? It's a really good thing. There's so much good beer, craft beer action going around so many neighborhoods and so many localities here in the United States that there's just good stuff really just about available, you know, available to just about everybody, really. Probably in most cases, don't have to go too far to find a good brewery in your own backyard. And, you know, the things that we mentioned before on the show, it's good for your local economy. It creates jobs. It supports your local tax base. And importantly, at least in many instances, it supports local creativity and artistry. There are so many people that are doing so many wonderful things with beer out there these days in the United States and elsewhere. But in particular here, our craft beer industry is just so strong and there's just so much cool stuff going on. Really, you know, go out and drink local. Go out and drink local beer. It's tasty and it's meaningful. Friends, that's it. Here's to you.